Welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we got somebody I grew up watching, a hero of mine. I always wanted to play basketball at Duke, but my talent level never reached that capacity. But he's better known today, probably. If we're going to be completely honest, as Cameron and Caden's dad, but none other than Carlos Boozer. How you feeling today, man?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
How does it, I mean, honestly, when you have sons who are doing this well, and we'll get into all things Carlos in a minute, but when you have sons that are doing this well, isn't that what you want to do as a father? Be one day known just simply as their dad and not for your accomplishments?
100%, man. The goal is obviously to make them better at everything in life than you were, right? So yeah. As parents, we try to pass on as much knowledge as possible, teach them as much as we can, obviously before they become adults and have to start paying taxes. So very proud of my kids, man. My older son is being recruited for baseball. Carmine, he's a pitcher, doing very well. And my twins, obviously, with tons of notoriety. They're 16-year-old juniors who are kicking butt in basketball and trying to make their own path in that lane as well.
Yeah, that's what's
up. And then my daughter's 4, and she paints all over the house. So,
man, I have 4-year-olds. God bless you. Yeah, I got 4-year-old twins. They'll be 5 in January, and they are just little unemployed terrorists. Walk around making demands all day long. That's all they do.
Absolutely.
Well, look, we start each one of our shows in kind of a unique way. We like to have our guests walk us through the arc of their career. And most people know Carlos Boozer, the NBA star, but not a lot of folks know what you've been up to since leaving the NBA. Can you talk listeners through your business ventures, your work as a commentator, and the work you've been doing since you left the league?
Yeah, so after I retired from the NBA, I took a little bit of time to travel, you know, get my feet settled in where I'm at, enjoy being a dad, as I mentioned before, just hanging out with the boys, hanging out with my daughter. But then I started to get a little bored, you know, after you get done playing, you know, 15 years or whatever, every day doing something, to go back to doing nothing just feels very unproductive, I would say. So I got a couple of calls to be a coach in the NBA with a couple of different teams, got a couple of calls to be an agent, start an agency. And then ESPN invited me up to Bristol to commentate a couple of playoff games. And I was like, okay, I'll come up. Came up. Really enjoy just talking the game and giving my knowledge and giving my thoughts on current players and the stature of their team. And then next thing I know, Turner calls. So I started doing some NBA TV stuff as well. So I dove into that on that side of it. I never thought as an athlete that I would be on the media side. Very different, but it's cool because we get an opportunity to talk to these guys, ask them questions that we know as players we really want to know the answers to. And obviously, that was the first thing I really did, was going to commentating. I work with ACC Network now with ESPN, and then I'll do NBA TV with Turner. And then business-wise, I've always loved real estate. You know, I grew up playing Monopoly, and right now I have a group of a real estate group, development group, that we do a bunch of stuff in North Carolina. We're building a lot of mega centers that have great tenants like Costco and Target and things like that, big boxes. And then I also do a little bit of multifamily rentals. I own the building and rent those out to some families.
Definitely. Well, it's good that you're doing absolutely everything you can to stay active nonetheless. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is your new book, Every Shot Counts. All right. That's the reason you're here. Every Shot Counts. First, unpack the title for me. How did you settle on that title, and what does that title mean?
Yeah, just every shot is an opportunity, right? So, you know, the purpose of my book, I wanted, I'm 41 years old, thought it was a good time to start to tell my story. So things that people don't know about me, some of the stuff that I kept to myself, but also a story of just overcoming adversity, you know, whether that was, you know, my best friend getting killed when I was young and 6 years old and having to deal with that childhood trauma that most people don't tap into, to being in seventh grade and, you know, telling my seventh grade teacher, hey, I want to go to the NBA. And she's telling me, you know, you should work at a gas station or maybe work at the local supermarket. And I was like, you know, that, think about that as a 12-year-old kid going in to say what you want to do when you grow up. And the teacher tries to like downplay what you want or discourage you from doing. So I just decided at 12 years old not to listen to my seventh grade teacher and go after the dream that I had of being in the NBA. And that's just an example. Those are just examples of facing adversity. Like, everybody has a dream normally. What happens is you run into a roadblock and you have a choice. Do you bust through the roadblock or do you pivot and go a different direction? I decided to bust through my roadblocks. And that's my message to my readers.
busting through roadblocks, and you're doing that now on TV all the time. Let me ask you a question to kind of go back just slightly about TV. And mm-hmm. I just want your honest opinion. Mm-hmm. You have journalists who are on TV. You have former players like yourself, Vince, who I know very well. You got even Doug Gottlieb actually shot the basketball on a high level. Anybody who plays above high school, for me, that's a high level of basketball. Yeah, everybody can make it. How do you feel about these other guys who are coming in who've never really played the game, commenting on the game, getting these big salaries? I'm not going to call any names, but how do you feel about these people that have these outsized opinions about your profession, but have never gone through the toil of what you all have been through?
Yeah, I mean, to be quite frank, I found myself more of a fan of the guys who have walked it. I just always been out, and I follow Shaq, Kenny, Charles. But at the same time, you have a guy like Ernie, right, on the pedestal, who's been around those guys. He's basically in the locker room of those guys once they retire, right? He's got them on camera. They're having great conversations. So there are a few people that I really do enjoy listening to who never really played at the next level. But at the same time, I find myself listening to those who have walked the same path that I've walked or walked past, like, you know, watching the NFL, and all those guys were quarterbacks or running backs or wide receivers or played the game on the field. I find myself listening to those guys more. And I think there's a huge value for getting a guy who played X amount of years at the highest level against the greatest competition in their sport and getting their opinion of what they're seeing in front of them. So I'm more of an advocate for that than anything else.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
What motivated you to write this book, and how did writing this book? You know, when people write books, one of the things I realized when I wrote my first book was that it was like introspective, but it was also like therapeutic. Like, yeah. How did this book change you?
Yeah, so many ways, man. I mean, obviously the story about my childhood friend I'd never told before. That's the first thing. It's one of those things I kind of kept to myself, kept to my mom and dad, my family, you know, Chris's mom. Like, you know, I never really told that story publicly because it was very near and dear to my heart, one. And then two, I think I just wanted to inspire people, like get a chance to get outside yourself, you know, go seek help if you need it. But if you have a goal, go for it. I think life is very short. We end up losing people that we're very dear to before their time. And one of the things that I wanted to pass on to the younger generation especially is don't let your seventh grade teacher deter you from what you want to do. If you have something you want to go after, if you want to be a commentator, if you want to be a broadcaster, if you want to be a photographer, artist in any kind of way, go for it. Seek out those that have like-minded interests like you. I call it finding your tribe. Like, find people who will help you achieve what you want to accomplish, because they are out there, but you have to go seek them.
I mean, that's good advice. You sound like you went to Duke or something.
something like that.
Who's your target audience for this book? You know, when I wrote the book, I was like, I think, you know, I want Black women to read this book. Is your book young people, moms, dads, soccer moms, basketball moms? What's your target audience? And then even more importantly, I know you kind of said it earlier, but dig a little deeper on what you want readers to take away from it.
Yeah, everybody. You know, my target audience is everybody, from the 5-year-old who has a dream of exploring the world to the parent who is raising that 5-year-old. Let them be a dreamer. You know, I was very fortunate to have parents that let me dream. Like, imagine, I'll put it to you like this. Imagine a kid growing up in Juneau, Alaska, tells his parents, hey, guys, I'm going to go to the NBA. right? It's going to be a bumpy road, but I didn't have parents that deterred me, that discouraged me, that told me that's not going to happen for you. I had parents that let me dream, and that helped me flourish my dream and made it even easier for me to go out every day after getting home from knocking out my homework from school and going to practice, because my parents believed in the dream that I had for myself. So my target audience is everybody, you know, from the grandparent to the kid, to the parents who's raising them. And at the same time, and you know this as being a little bit older, it's never too late to reinvent yourself, right? I mean, at the same time, you could be a 35-year-old man and have a new dream that you're trying to go after. You're going to come into some roadblocks. You're going to come into some speed bumps. I feel like sometimes God will test you to see how bad you really want it, right? So sometimes you got to keep going. And that's my message, is just keep going. If you have a dream, keep going.
That's true. That the test will come. You know, I oftentimes get a chance to interview fathers that are also public figures. Talk to me about that. I mean, you can talk about how you wrote it in a book, but also talk about that balance. Like, do you feel like you're making up time now that you're out of the league? Your schedule is so intense. Like, talk about that balance when you're in the league and how you wrote about being that type of father present now in the book.
Yeah, it's very difficult to be all the way present as a professional athlete. Like, our time is so demanded with games, travel, practice, appearances in the community. Different, obviously, we have requirements to talk to the media. That doesn't take up too much of our time, but we're away from home just as much as we're home. So you end up missing half the year, or half the season doing your job. You know, obviously, you're doing a great job of taking care of your family, providing for your family. But sometimes you miss that first walk or those first words that your kid speaks, or you know, the first time they discover, you know, the basketball because it's been in the room for 6 months. Oh, this is cool. So you do miss a lot of stuff as an athlete, just if anybody in the workforce, you're at work trying to provide for your family. So you're going to miss a ton of stuff. When I retired, I was like, wow, I have so much time to go to every practice, to help with homework, to travel, to be there for those tough conversations. Like, I think for me, it was an opportunity to just be home. And I think sometimes, you know, we take it for granted, but we overlook that aspect. There's a ton of families who have an absent parent, and it's not always they're divorced or they have a broken family or a blended family. It's just somebody works too much, right? And so there's part of that as an athlete where you can't wait to get home and just enjoy your kids. I've been able to do that now, where I get a chance to be there every day. I get to watch every single game that my kids play, and that means the world to me.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to have a good life partner too. My wife, we're going through that right now. The stresses of me going out and trying to do CNN, write books, you know, do all this other shit. And you got to provide, right? And
hey,
you
big shout out to all the moms out there, man. Very blessed to have beautiful moms that take care of the kids when we're not around.
Hey, man, shout out to Ellen. That's what I'm talking about. I don't even know if she listened to the show, but shit. Shout out to my wife. You know, we're going to get to the most important things. I got to ask you some basketball while you're here.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, some of the folks you played with, like LeBron and Kobe. Mm-hmm. But before we get to those two, who were some of the toughest players you faced, and who were some of the most underrated players you played with and against? Like, I think one of the best basketball players in the NBA who doesn't get their due right now is somebody like Jrue Holiday. Like, he makes a team go. Right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, losing Jrue Holiday is gonna hurt the Bucks in the playoffs more than gaining Damian Lillard. So who are those type of players that you played with?
Yeah, I think off the bat, underrated guys that I played, like a guy for me is Nate Robinson. You know, like, he's one of those guys that you just think of as like a microwave. And that's what the fans see on game day. But what you don't see behind the scenes is this guy shows up to every practice. He was going at D Rose, like doing his job on the backup team, trying to make D Rose ready for every game, going at him, playing pick and roll, playing one-on-one with Jimmy Butler his rookie year every day after practice. Like, the stuff that Nate poured into our team behind the scenes in practice, bringing cupcakes on road games that he would bake with his daughter. Like, there's stuff like that you guys don't know about. And that's what, to me, he's like one of the most underappreciated athletes that we ever had. The guy's 5'8", playing in a league full of giants, won a slam dunk contest 3 times, like played a 10-12 year NBA career. Like, very, very impressive.
And was a stud in college. Was a stud in college.
Yeah, and football, on the football field too, right? You know, it was possible in the NFL. So he's a guy I look at as very under. Also, you know, it's funny when you get ready for teams and you're doing the scouting report and you're going over, you know, Marc Gasol and you're going over Zach Randolph and you're going over Tony Allen's defense, be careful with the ball. But the most important piece of that team was Mike Conley. Mike Conley Jr. I think he's an underrated player that was great for a very long time. He's still playing, but in his heyday in Memphis, wow, was he a problem. I mean, he never made an all-star team because he's playing in a
– At one point, wasn't Mike Conley the highest paid player in the league for like a minute?
That's how – and that's great because the Memphis Grizzlies realized his importance. Like, we talked about Z-Bo, we talked about Marc Gasol, but we never really dug in to appreciate Mike Conley Jr. That was like one of those guys for me that was super underrated but was so important to their team, similar to a Drew Holiday.
Contrast Kobe and LeBron as teammates. Not the players that we see. We'd be here fighting over that all day. I mean, I honestly don't. I don't think Kobe's like in the top eight of all time. I think LeBron's probably number 1A or B. So no, not on the court, but just as teammates. How do you contrast them?
First of all, Kobe's definitely higher than number eight. But
let's back up then. Where do you put? I mean,
Think about his skill set. First of all, he could do everything you wanted to do offensively. He lacked nothing offensively, and then defensively, he could lock up your best player, whether that was D Wade, no matter T-Mac, whoever it was. He was first team all defense, second team all defense, almost his entire NBA career. Yep. That's impressive. Think about being the most skilled offensive player in the league. And also being one of the most hated guys to go against defensively. That's hard to do.
I mean, no, he was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying when you get in the top eight, you're talking LeBron, you're talking Mike, you're talking Kareem, you're talking Oscar, you're talking Magic.
Oscar? I mean, you got Oscar above Kobe? Come on, stop. Let's move on. We're going to be here a long time.
You got Magic above Kobe.
I'm not knocking Magic, but come on, Oscar, stop it. Anyway.
Anyway, go ahead.
let's stop. But
teammates, how are they?
As teammates, they were great. It was funny because, you know, at that time, Kobe was the best player in the league and LeBron was coming into that stage, right? He was younger than Kobe, obviously. He's coming into that. And I think one of the things that Kobe, he was very serious about the game, very like locked in. And LeBron had this, I don't know, just this awesome demeanor about him of, you know what, I'm going to make everything funny. So he started cracking jokes. Next thing you see Bean smiling a little bit here or there. Like, it broke the ice because these are the two top players in our league, two top players in the world, and Kobe has the throne and LeBron's coming for it, right? And then we're on the same team with Team USA in 2008 to go win the Olympics in Beijing, and you see them bond with each other and vibe with each other, and it just broke the ice because of LeBron's humility to just be funny and, you know, be a jokester from time to time behind the scenes. And that made it easy for Kobe to let go of his guard, so to speak, let down his guard and just be a teammate, just enjoy the moment. And man, were they special, bro. Kobe could guard anybody. LeBron could guard anybody. They're both dominant. They both passed the ball. They were both knocking down huge shots. You saw that championship game against Spain where Kobe literally took the game over. It was he ran through
Paul Gasol first
to send the message, right? And then and LeBron had no problem just feeding the hot hand and giving him the ball. It was one of the best teams to be a part of because we had two of the best players ever on the same team.
Man, that just sounds amazing. What is it like playing for Coach K? And what was that Coach K experience like during your formative years? And this is going to transition into my next question about your twins. But what is it like having somebody like Coach K during your formative years?
Yeah, it was awesome for me. I mean, that was a no-brainer. When I was coming out of high school, I got recruited by everybody. And when I got a chance to get to know Coach K and build that relationship, I'm like, man, this is the guy that I really want to play for. And I always say this, and this is just how I feel as an athlete, but some of the greatest coaches, they have one thing in common. They're still your friend past the field, past the court. Coach K's been in my life since I'm 17. I left Duke at 20 years old, and I talk to him every month. You know, he's one of those guys that literally reaches out to you all the time to check in on you, your family, asks about my parents, my kids, all the time. So, like, Coach made an impact on me because he taught me the importance of next play, right? So just to give you some contrast or some – like in a game, you might turn the ball over, right? Which happens, right? Turn the ball over. as an athlete, you can get down on yourself and be like, oh man, I let my team down or whatever, and use the energy that way. He taught us, okay, if you make a mistake, use that same energy to get the ball back, to make a great play for your team, to build your team up on the next play down, which translates to life. You know, whether you lose somebody close to you, whether you go lose a job, whether you get divorced, use the energy to get your next play, to get back on track so you can continue to move forward. And that's something I've used my entire life, and I learned that through Coach K.
That kind of leads me to my next question, one of my last questions I have for you, so you can go out and continue selling this book. And we need to make sure this book is a New York Times bestseller, Every Shot Counts by Carlos Boozer. Yeah, he done put his modeling picture on the front. What are you looking at? He done took it on the side of his bed or something. I don't know. So, you know, this is different than when, I mean, I'm 39, you're 41. We kind of grew up in the same generation, same time period. You're raising kids not that far removed from when you were going through the recruiting process, but it's 180 degrees different. Yeah. You got the portal, you got NILs, you got G League, you got overtime, you got all of these different nuances. Help listeners understand how much college basketball has changed and what your experiences are as a father of two blue chip recruits going through the recruiting process.
Yeah, thank you for the compliments, by the way, but also to dive into your question, it's changed dramatically. You know, when I got to college in 99, 2000, guys were staying on campus for 3 or 4 years. You know, we had Shane Battier for 4 years on campus.
Battier tried to stay 7 years if they would have let him.
They would, absolutely. He was Mr. College Basketball. Me, Jay Will, and Dunleavy all stayed 3 years. Like, that was normal to enter your junior and senior year as a college athlete, where today it's one and done. And that's why I take my hat off to these coaches who had to adapt to these guys coming on campus for, you know, 8 months, 6, 7 months, and then going on to the pros and still being able to run a great program and reach Final Fours and have championship aspirations. You basically have a group of guys for a very short period of time, and you have to make them, turn them into a team that's competing for a title in a very short period of time. Where back when I came in college, you're basically recruiting a guy for at least 2 to 4 years to have a chance to win a championship and build a rapport and build a relationship and build a foundation with that guy. Now that's cut in half. Then on top of that, you have the portal, right? So now if I'm a college coach, do I want to go get this 18-year-old kid from high school with no college experience, or will I go get this guy who played 2 or 3 years in college, more physically built, more mature, knows the
man. He's a man.
Tournament. He's a man. Yeah. Do I go get that player? So it makes it very difficult for high school athletes to get the same opportunities that we got back in the day. However, in my kids' situation, they're working their butts off to be some of the top players, and they're being recruited by everybody, all the top schools you can think of. And because of that, they're going to have an opportunity to play for some great colleges on some great campuses, and they're going to have an opportunity to hopefully play with some other great players and make the tournament, see what March Madness is about once they get there. The other thing I was going to say is, I think it's great that they have, you know, for me, like I met their mom when I was a freshman in college. And then obviously I live the life that they're trying to walk through, right? So because of that, they have two parents who lived it. You know, CeCe came to every one of my basketball games in college, almost all of my NBA games. So the boys were around that. You know, their uncles are Derrick Rose and Darren Williams and Joakim Noah and, you know, Jimmy Butler. These are guys that they know as uncles. So they have that poise of being around the game so much as kids. And so they take that maturity with them everywhere they go.
I mean, that's dope. I mean, college coaches, I know they're knocking down your door, and there is an inherent value, and you realize it even especially after you play, of actually going to college and building relationships and not being forced into a light where you're, you know, you have to do other things. I mean, going to college parties, meeting college girls, you know, eating. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a part of life. Last question, most important question. Well, I want everybody to know that if I have to choose between Shane Battier, Elton Brand, and Carlos Boozer, I'm taking Carlos Boozer every day of the week. Twice on Tuesdays. Last question, the most important question. When is your book on sale? Where can people find the book? How can they buy it?
Yeah, the book is out, guys. You can go on my link in my bio on my Instagram. You can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go anywhere. You can buy a book. Go get Every Shot Counts. It's out now. And I hope you guys enjoy the read, enjoy the book, and definitely spread it to your friends. It's one of those things that are going to inspire you and tell you to go after your dream.
Oh, you know, I can't let you go. I got one more question real quick. Tell me this. How good would Jason Williams have been had he not got hurt?
Oh, Jay was cold, man. And he'd have been
on. Cold, wasn't
it? I'll tell you how good.
McGrady, him and Tracy McGrady are definitely two of the top players that ever played a game if they don't get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jay Will would have been on that 2008 Olympic team that won the gold medal in Beijing if he got the chance to keep playing. He was that good. He was quick. He was fast. He was unafraid of the moment. He could do whatever you wanted him to do. He could defend. He could score. He could go above the rim. Like, he was a bad man. Trust me, bad man. Yeah.
Carlos Boozer, thank you for your time and joining the Bakari Sellers podcast. Everybody, go out and get this book. Every shot counts. It's gonna be all-